Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
This is Gerard Gibbert, and thank you for listening to Middays here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert is on the air. Middays with Gerard Gibbert is powered by CSpire. Power your home or business with CSpire fiber. To learn more, visit supertalk.fm/CSpire. CSpire fiber powers Super Talk Mississippi.
Get ready. Get ready to go beyond the headlines and join a meaningful conversation with people from around the state. You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert here on Super Talk Mississippi.
And welcome to Midday Super Talk Mississippi. I'm your host, Gerard Gibbert, along with Rhino in the Element Wealth Studio, guiding you through the middle of your day with facts, fodder, and fine music. A little under the weather, folks. Apologize for that. Feeling a lot better. Morning, Rhino.
Howdy, howdy.
So you're going to have to handle most of it today. As you can tell, my voice is faltering a bit.
We're going to talk about John Wayne movies I watched this weekend with Dad. We're going to talk about U.S. soccer winning their first match of the Gold Cup against Trinidad and Tobago. We'll talk about all kinds of stuff.
Oh, all that exciting stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing about Israel and Iran.
I mean, they're just trading blows at this point. It's not really any update.
Man, stocks are up. We've got a rally underway. What about this Minnesota situation? How much can happen
weird over
a weekend? Man.
It seems like everybody wanted to do something for Father's Day weekend besides celebrate their dads.
Man.
Because you had the No Kings protest, which I will admit I was wrong. I undershot my estimations on how many people would show up. It was a rather sizable protest at the handful of places across the Magnolia State that held one, although I don't think all of them got off the ground. I think there were a couple permitting problems for a few of them. Didn't quite get their I's dotted and T's crossed in time. But there were people at the Capitol marching around, sharing their grievances, generally just being old and ornery, it seemed. Didn't see a whole lot of youthful exuberance from the protesters. And then in Tupelo, where I was for the weekend to spend some time with family and get to see Dad for Father's Day, I didn't see the lady, but there were pictures of her on social media, and some of my family members saw her while they were out and about. I guess she's just full-blown Trump derangement syndrome and off her rocker, which is about par for the course for bleeding-heart liberals and crazy leftists. She was dressed up like a chicken, Bock-bocking at anybody and everybody.
Man. All right, so this guy's in custody.
Yeah, in Minnesota, it's he got access to the legislator's house by wearing a law enforcement costume and a really ill-fitting face covering, like head covering, full face mask.
Made him bald.
Yeah, it's... for lack of a better term, it looked like something out of a Mission Impossible knockoff movie. It wasn't the kind you see in Mission Impossible where they look like the other actor because it's actually another actor until they do the CGI effect of pulling off their face. His head looked about two sizes too big for his body, and apparently they were looking at him through the Ring camera. So I'm not victim blaming. I'm just saying if you look through your Ring camera and see somebody with a dome two sizes too big, maybe call the police and double check that they're actually at your door and don't let them in. But yeah, he shot several people, killed a few people. His wife was detained after running with family members to the bank to take out, I think I saw the report, of $50,000 from the bank, and she had passports and other things in the car, and she was detained. and they found him, and he's been arrested. And then you had the media going to visit with his roommate, the Papa John's delivery guy, that claimed he had a text from him saying he was going to be dead soon and that he was sorry. And there's conflicting reports on where his political allegiances lie, because apparently that's what everybody cares about when somebody dies, is who did the killer vote for, instead of actually caring about the grieving process for those that lost loved ones. But yeah, it was, I don't know that we're ever going to get the full truth out of that, if I want to be completely honest,
exactly.
Because it's so screwy to have somebody, again, imitating law enforcement to gain access to a lawmaker's house to kill him. You can only presume that because it's a lawmaker, it was somehow politically motivated, but we still don't know at this point.
Like, had a bulletproof vest on, right?
I don't know if it was an actual bulletproof vest. From the pictures I've seen, it looked like a Halloween costume.
Oh, okay.
Like, it wasn't an El Cheapo. It wasn't one of the plastic shirts that only wears one time and you're lucky if it lasts through Halloween night. It looked like a higher-end costume, but it didn't look like a real uniform.
Yeah, really weird.
Oh, yeah. Just
some sort of manifesto, maybe?
Yeah, and that's getting the tinfoil hat crowd spinning their gears, because there are other examples of manifestos not being released to the public, and then when they're released, it seems to be damaging in one direction politically. And then you have other examples of manifestos getting released, like the crazy guy that had connections to international weapons trades and stuff that tried to kill Trump at the golf course. His manifesto was released within like 24 to 48 hours, where he was telling America to, quote unquote, finish the job.
Mm.
But somehow we're not going to be privy to this person's manifesto. I mean, I understand there's an open investigation, and I understand you want to play things close to the vest, because, I mean, you look at history of investigations, probably one of the most famous manhunts we've had in recent memory, the Boston Marathon bombing, and the craziness that happened when they released information to the public. Because if you remember, the bombing happened in Boston on the Marathon at the finish line, and they were trying to figure out who it was. They were looking at all the footage, and they knew suspects. They had suspects in the investigation, and then the news got a leak with the pictures of the suspect, so the feds came out and said, all right, here's suspect one, here's suspect two. And shortly after that, all hell broke loose, where they shot an MIT police officer trying to get his gun and carjacked the guy and drove him around for 2 hours, and then started throwing pipe bombs at the police, because they were put on the run because the information was released to the public. So I understand there's a need for discretion, but when you come out and say there's not a whole lot to the manifesto, why wouldn't you then release it?
So no kings, paraphernalia, brochures,
allegedly,
documents,
yeah,
in the car, right?
That's what was reported.
And
I haven't seen any pictures of it that looked like they were legit.
But also something about attacking abortion clinics?
Supposedly.
Right? And pro-choice organizations?
Yeah, that's the problem with this. There's reporting on what was in his car and what's in the manifesto, but I haven't seen any good pictures of what was in his car or what was in the manifesto. So all we're stuck with is reporting from media, and we all know how I feel about trusting mainstream media.
I think it's sad, honestly, that we've gotten to a point in this country where everybody's waiting to see, okay, what's this guy's ideology? Let's hope he's with them, not us, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of overshadowing a lot of what's going on here.
Because in a sane world where not everything is filtered through the lens of who you voted for in the last election, this person's obviously deranged,
oh, yeah,
disturbed, sick, crazy, sick in the head, because he felt the need to take someone's life and do so in a dramatically theatrical way.
Sad.
Extremely.
And now reports are that members of Congress are nervous that they could be next, that they are targets.
Fairly certain members of Congress have more security
than
at
a state
their disposal
rep.
Than a state rep.
Yeah.
Which tells me that the members of Congress are simply trying to do what they do best, which is get in front of a camera and make it all about them.
Got to get the attention, baby. Yeah, that's exactly what's going on. So you're just seeing reports, 8 dead now after Iran missile attack in Israel. So that conflict, if you could call it that, is escalating rapidly.
And that's what Iran threatened to do. They threatened to overwhelm the Iron Dome, and there are people saying, see, look, the Iron Dome's not infallible, and that's the problem. Nobody claimed it was.
Right.
It can be overwhelmed, but if you look at what's blowing up in the sky versus what's making it through, they're stopping the majority of it.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Time for a break. Robert Dozier, the executive director of the Mississippi Independent Pharmacies Association, at 11:05.
Patriotism is a...
This segment of Middays with Gerard Gibbert is brought to you by Covington County Hospital in Collins, where your health matters.
Now back to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
We are back in the Element Well studio. Apologize for the voice faltering a bit. Had a little cold Thursday night. I couldn't hardly talk at all Friday. Better today, improvement, but still not quite there. So Rhino's kindly handling most of the dialogue. Man, the strikes continue. Looks like more both sides, right, going at it.
Yeah, and Israel stated from the get-go that this would likely extend into a week or two. I think the exact timing they're not going to give you, but I want to say the longest period of time that was reported is that they will conclude after 2 weeks of airstrikes.
And 2 weeks.
2 weeks of airstrikes, which it may not take that long if Israel is to be believed, because after the rocket launches from Iran into Israel, Israel came out and stated that that's their prerogative. They didn't say it that way, but they have air superiority over Iran is what they're claiming, which means they have been able to knock out or make inoperable the air defense systems, such as surface-to-air missiles, anti-aircraft batteries, all of that good stuff that Iran may have, which would pretty much let Israel continue to bombard Iran at will. If they're not worried about their aircraft being shot down over Iran, then you can kind of do what you want.
And oil is now down. It eclipsed $70. Fears that this would disrupt supply. Now it's down because investors say, well, Israel's attacking their energy infrastructure, but sparing the most critical infrastructure. I mean, that's the sort of science the investors have it down to.
Yeah, there were reports that there was one key cog in Iran's oil machine got hit. I think that kind of sparked the fears, but so far, that's the only one that has been a major producer or refinery point in the Iran infrastructure that has been hit by Israel. So it has assuaged some fears. I think you're seeing Saudi Arabia with how they're kind of just being mum on all of it.
Yeah.
Is also kind of helping, if Saudi Arabia came out and were vehemently against Israel striking Iran, you likely wouldn't have oil prices going back down.
I think they're quietly celebrating it.
Oh, yeah. All the sane Middle Eastern countries, the ones that aren't led by insane Islamic radicals, they can't really publicly come out and say, yeah, go Israel, because that's just not good for
right.
business for them. But they can also sit on their hands and mum's the word and not really prop up Iran, because they understand Iran really is the burr under the saddle for them. They're not thinking about what's best for the region. They're not thinking about what's best for the Islamic countries in general. They're really only worried about consolidating the power they have and destroying Israel. And when that's one of your main goals as a country, is to destroy an enemy of yours, it's not really conducive to taking care of your people, which is also why you're seeing some of the royal families leaving, or royal family members. I mean, royal's not the right word, but leadership's families are leaving Iran. I'm going to go back and forth between Iran and Iran because I don't care. It's just going to – whatever comes out, comes out. I don't respect the leadership. I don't respect the Ayatollah. I think he has done nothing but cause harm to the people that live there, that try to live their life as best they can under his thumb. So it is disheartening to see how far they've fallen from where they were before I was even born.
70s.
Yeah. I mean, you look at pictures of Tehran in the early 70s. It looks like pictures of San Francisco from the early 70s, with people in mini skirts and tube tops and big hair out having a good time.
Back when the Shah was in charge.
And now you look at it, and the Ayatollah's in charge, and it is literal hell on earth for some parts of it.
Set them back hundreds and hundreds of years. Unbelievable. The market's largely shrugging off this conflict. I think it's to your point, because investors know, just like the other countries in the Middle East, that Iran is a global menace. And the world would be better off if they would, of course, end their nuclear ambitions and transition back to a modern society as they were pre-Ayatollahs, pre-radical Islamist ideology taking hold of the country.
And that's one thing, one of the few things I've seen, and I don't know if it was a recent interview, but it's been replayed, was an interview with the Saudi prince saying, look, Iran having a nuke is bad, but if Iran gets a nuke, Saudi Arabia will get a nuke. And that's a series of dominoes you don't want to start toppling, where there's this arms race in the Middle East for nuclear weapons.
Not good. Because they all got money.
Oh, yeah.
To do what
and
they want.
There are people with nuclear materials that need money, cough, Russia.
Right. Yep, exactly.
That, and Russia, I mean, even to this day, they still don't know where everything is.
Well, apparently the president, you saw this, and Vladimir Putin had a conversation yesterday, and they focused more on this, it's being reported, than they did the Russian-Ukraine war. And apparently the president encouraged Putin to perhaps intervene and try to propose some sort of solution. Obviously, I think he's talking about on the Iranian side.
Yeah, because, I mean, without Putin's help, Iran wouldn't be nearly as deadly. And Putin, because you got Iran, Russia, and China. I mean, you got, I think it's Brazil is also in BRICS, and is it Indonesia that's the I?
Yeah.
But Brazil and Indonesia, they're heads of state. They call up Iran, and nobody's going to answer the phone. If Putin calls or Xi calls, they're picking up the phone. I don't think Xi has really any motivation to get involved whatsoever. But Putin, being Putin, probably doesn't like that the attention has been taken off of his strategic military action and is now being focused in the Middle East. And I don't know that he necessarily has Ayatollah on a leash, but he could definitely call and go, look, dude, this is not going to end well for you. He could talk some sense into him. Because if the reporting is to be believed, Trump has told Netanyahu it would be a bad idea to take out the Ayatollah, which is what Israel was threatening. Israel was threatening that if they retaliated, they would just take out the Ayatollah. And
yeah,
that would definitely create a power vacuum in Iran. I think you are seeing some semblance of a groundswell of an uprising against him. I don't know that it's going to get to the point where there's a popular coup or takeover of the Ayatollah by the Iranian people, but you take out the Ayatollah, you make him a martyr, and then everybody that was on the fence sides with him.
And I think that's why the president recommended not doing that to Israel, right? Had a conversation with Netanyahu.
If the reporting is to be believed, I haven't heard the conversation because I'm not privy to that kind of stuff. But, yeah, if Trump really did tell Netanyahu, look, don't do that, that would, I know it would feel good for you, but it'd be bad for the whole region.
Right. So they took out many of the other leaders, I guess the lieutenants, if you will, right?
Yeah, I mean, the reporting was that they had Mossad agents, whether that be Israeli Mossad agents or Iranian Mossad agents or Iranians working with Mossad. The largest collection of leadership taken out was, I believe, the Iranian Air Force leadership, where they called a meeting, got them all in a room, and then the reporting, all of the reporting stated that they kept them there. Which that stood out to me like a sore thumb, because that's just vague enough to mean, okay, we had somebody in the chain of command and leadership and called the meeting and then he excused himself to the bathroom and the bomb hit, or it was as medieval as, well, everybody's here now, let's start the meeting, chain the doors.
So what does Thomas say here? On the ceasefire text line, with all their superiority, why was Bibi on Fox News trying to say America needs to attack Iran? Did he do that?
I didn't see it.
You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert, here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. We had a little technical glitch in the last segment. All good to go now. So, the president is at the G7 summit. It's in Canada this year. And he's meeting with the Canadian PM. Still talking about making them the 51st state. What do you think?
I think that's instead of a nickname for Canada and the people of Canada or the government of Canada, that's become his go-to.
Yeah.
When talking about Canada, his way to deflect and he's toying with them that way.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no serious desire for a 51st state. I say that, but there are people that would love for D.C. to be a 51st state. There are people that would love for Puerto Rico to be a 51st state. Both of those are more palatable than Canada, where it's a giant landmass with millions of people, and they can't seem to get their ducks in a row. So why would you want them voting on how we do business?
He is standing with the PM, taking questions from the press. He says Iran is not winning this war. He just said that.
I mean, that's to be expected. Israel's our ally. Iran is not. So you would definitely cheerlead for your allies. But, I mean, if you look at historically, Israel's been able to punch Iran in the nose and set them back a bit. And that could, very well could be why, as Thomas said, Netanyahu was calling for America to attack and talking about all the different ways Iran has attacked Americans. That's true. Iran has financed terror that has led to the deaths of Americans. There's no doubt about that. Drawing a direct link from the terrorist to the Iranian government is where it gets a little fishy, because they kind of like Russia has the Wagner group where they go do things that Russia wants to disavow. Iran has people in their military that they send off to give money to the terrorists that they can disavow. But everybody knows Iran is financing terror.
Yeah.
So
no
Iran
doubt.
Has obviously financed the deaths of Americans. Iran has attacked American installations, causing the death of Americans. It's happened. But historically, Iran has never been a threat to America. Just go back to the late 80s with, what was it, Operation Praying Mantis during the Iran-Iraq war, where the U.S. vessel hit a mine, and then Iran tried to flex, and the U.S. Navy sunk a whole bunch of their Navy, and I believe the word was proportional. Proportional response.
Darren and Jackson... I was in the Navy with a guy who was born in Iran because his dad worked at the embassy there. He said the Shah was great and they lived like the U.S. Yeah. I mean, you're right. You can look at the photos. That you look at modern day Iran, the women with the burqas and the faces covered, and look in the 70s, they're dressed like Americans. In the 70s, same clothing, same attire. But radical Islamists took over in the vacuum, and set the country back hundreds, if not thousands, of years. Unbelievable.
So, and held hostages for forever and all that good jazz.
On the ceasefire text line, Greenland will be 51.
Greenland does have more strategic value than Canada, I would say.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Simply because of the control of the Arctic Ocean and the Northern Atlantic compared to what Canada would provide. And I don't see Greenland being 51 either, but I would definitely take it over Canada.
Canada has a bunch of oil.
True. And a lot of lumber.
That's right.
But they also got a lot of liberals that would completely sway elections for the Democrats.
Two senators... You know, would be Democrats from Canada, right?
More than likely, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. But the markets are shrugging off all of this news. Again, I think they're happy, or at least perhaps feel positive about an outcome that isolates Iran, that diminishes their threat. I would agree with that.
Especially if they can hit Iran hard enough to weaken the government enough for the people of Iran to step up and take control of their own lives.
Yeah.
And rip it away from the grip of the Ayatollah. Which I'm sure there are operatives, whether they be CIA or Mossad or whoever, that are on the ground or working feverishly to stir up the unrest that would be required to control the country by the public, but I don't know that I see it going that direction. I think this is going to be tit for tat back and forth until one of them gets tired and says uncle, and I don't think that's going to be Israel.
No, I don't either. Immigration policy. Intriguing. The president says he wants ICE to step up efforts in major cities of finding bad guys and getting them out of here. But he's sort of given a pass for workers in the agricultural industry, hospitality industry, meat packing industry, construction industries.
And I think that's a bad idea simply because it sets a precedent that then you will have other industries coming out of the woodwork saying, well, we need our illegal immigrants too. I think you can have both your cake and eat it too in this instance. You can reform the work visas, the immigrant work visas that allow immigrants to legally come and work in those jobs. You can reform that to make it easier. But if you are here illegally, I am still of the belief that you should go home because you are breaking the law being here illegally. There are legal means for you to come to this country and do that same work. So go home and do that.
It's
plus, I don't see the need to offer amnesty, which is what it sounded like, to illegal aliens working in certain industries, if we're not going to punish the Americans hiring the illegals in the first place.
They say they can't get workers, American workers.
Bull. They can't get workers for slave wages. That's the problem with illegal immigration the Democrats talked about before they went off the deep end, was how if you bring in all these people willing to work for pennies on the dollar, that drives wages down.
It does, but that also keeps costs low. So we should, I think, accept that if we're going to convert to an all-American workforce, we are probably looking at much higher cost on most of the things we buy. Food, housing, hotels, already expensive.
But you don't have to have an illegal workforce if you already have mechanisms in place for the immigrants to come here legally to work.
And
I would imagine even a legal immigrant working in the hospitality industry or working in the farming industry, while they're not going to get paid $1.25 an hour or less, you can pay a minimum wage, which is less than what the Americans would take for doing it.
I agree with that. But we should put out a concerted effort to get them through the process. I'm talking about those who are contributing, who are obeying the law. Perhaps we should figure out a way to cut through all the red tape and get these people legal status so that they can work, contribute, pay taxes. I mean, here in Mississippi, we have to be honest. They may be illegal, but they're spending money at the stores. And that's generating tax revenue for the state.
The way I see it is if the U.S. government is willing to spend $1,000 per illegal immigrant of taxpayer money to send them back, that same money could be used to send them back. They fill out the legal paperwork and they can come back on their own.
I agree. I mean, we should be able to affect that easily, but it requires some effort, some change in process. It's being reported that those who really want to see, as you point out, mass deportation, that this exception for farm workers stemmed from conversations the president had with Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins. And there's some who are calling for her head to be fired because of her position. Man, weird stuff going on. We're stepping aside for a break, coming right back in the Element Well studio. Get together, let the good times roll.
If you're feeling anxious about...
You're listening to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Okay, so the House is off this week. Senate is taking up the big, beautiful bill. Oh, boy. The talking points coming from Democrats on the big, beautiful bill are starting to get on my nerves. Here's your buddy. I say that with tongue in cheek. Bernie Sanders.
The old aardvark himself. Give me all your money. Yeah, here's what he had to say to Trump's Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent, talking about Medicaid.
Why do you think at a time of unprecedented income and wealth inequality, when people like yourself economically have never, ever had it so good, why do you think it's a good idea to cut Medicaid for low-income and working-class people by $700 billion to give $235 billion in tax breaks to the very, very, very richest people in this country, perhaps a few hundred families? Explain. A few hundred of the wealthiest families in this country, $235 billion tax break. Explain to the American people why you think that's a great idea.
I think that this will increase small businesses substantially. That most small businesses, they are...
has zero to do with, come on, you're smarter than that. This is the top 0.2%. This is not a mom and pop store. These are multi-billionaires, and the savings go to their kids after they pass away. This is nothing more than a gift to billionaires in this country.
Billionaires. He's so wrong in all that. The first thing is, keep in mind, all we're doing is continuing the existing tax environment. There's some additions, but for the most part, as far as the billionaires are concerned, nothing changes.
And the Medicaid cuts are removing disallowing Medicaid coverage for illegal aliens.
And all that does is reduce the amount the federal government sends to those states that are covering illegals out of their own kitty. So, and requiring that you go to work to receive Medicaid. They're estimated to produce cuts, but they're strictly speaking not really cuts. It's not like we're changing the FMAP, the federal match. That's not what's in the bill. What's in the bill is, if you're covering illegal state, we're going to reduce the amount we send you for Americans. So don't do it. If you want Medicaid and you can work, you got to go to work. So they're not strictly cuts. But that's not the way he portrays it, of course.
Well, he also doesn't portray himself as a millionaire with three homes. He's the humble Bernie Sanders fighting for the working man.
Total fraud.
Even though he's never worked an honest day's work in his entire life.
But this notion that...
Remember, Bernie Sanders was so useless at the hippie commune, they kicked him out.
Oh, man. It's this notion that it's one or the other. That's it. It's a zero-sum game. You can either give tax breaks or cut Medicaid is just wrong. That's not the math, not how it works. And this idea that the more affluent, more successful in society are obligated, according to Bernie and Democrats, to pay for health care and all the other benefits the federal government provides. How do we get to that point? How is that not just blatant Marxist redistribution class warfare?
Yeah, it would be different if they were calling upon the moral obligation of the wealthy in like a noblesse oblige kind of sense. But to require the wealthy of America to foot the bill for the moochers of America at gunpoint, that's not freedom.
Agree, but that's what they're saying. That's their position, is that we got to go take from this group to give benefits to this group. Just egregious class warfare. That is not consistent with good, sound economic tax policy that could power and does power this nation. I wish they'd quit with the untruths about that. Like, oh, we got to have all their money so we can give benefits to this group. That's what they're saying. And we're going to skim off the top because we're government and we're virtuous and we're altruistic. It's sickening. And there are numerous other Democrats and surrogates and other people that are doing the same sort of messaging as we just heard from Bernie Sanders. It's time for a break. Fox News, Super Talk News. Yes, my voice is faltering today. Rhino's handling most of the action. I'm actually getting much, much better. This hit me Thursday night. I'll be back on Wednesday, off tomorrow, already scheduled, and I'll be good by then. Thanks for bearing with us on that. Robert Dozier with the Independent Pharmacies Association is next.
Your hour of Middays with Gerard Gibbert is brought to you by the Mississippi Business Journal. Visit msbusinessjournal.com. Scott Coopwood, publisher and president.
Welcome to the show that challenges you to think deeply, and look beyond political posturing. You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back. Hour two of Middays is live from the Element Well studio. Gerard's got a little faltering voice, but we'll get through it. Appreciate you indulging me on that today. It's our pleasure to welcome Robert Dozier, Executive Director of the Mississippi Independent Pharmacies Association. Hey, Robert, thanks for coming in.
Good morning, Gerard. How are you doing today?
Better when I get this voice working again.
You need to go see a good independent pharmacist.
I probably do, yeah. All right, so let's start with this executive order introduced by signing into effect by the president a month or so ago, right?
That's correct. I think it was May the 12th, to be exact, I think. And, you know,
complicated.
Very. Now, this is the prescription drug problem. The high cost of prescription drug problem has been an issue that several presidential administrations have tried to solve, Democrats and Republicans, for many years. We can go all the way back to the first President Bush on this issue right here. And every presidential administration has always had problems with this. And so a lot of people are thinking, well, the current president is just trying to legislate with the pen. And you and I both know that when you start doing executive orders, it gets very complicated. And we also have problems with existing laws that are already on the books. You know, I was reading something this morning just prepping for this right here. And, you know, this executive order might run, you know, into some issues that we have with the Inflation Reduction Act that was passed in the Biden administration.
How so?
Well, you know, I was you and I were talking off the air, and the Congressional Research Service, basically a legal arm of Congress over there, their legal staff, they've put a deal out that was I think it was on June the 5th, apologize, and saying there might be some issues there that President Trump and his administration cannot force some of these drug companies to negotiate to the most favored nation like he intends, because the law says that the government and the drug companies have to negotiate. So we're starting to see some barriers that have been set up already. Now, look, that's all legal interpretation right there. You and I are not going to solve this issue right here today. I wish we could. But, you know, Gerard, the one thing that we're seeing is, as time has gone on over the past, say, 20, 30 years, prescription drug prices have steadily gone up. Now, why is that? You know, the one problem is all of these players that we have in the game right here. And President Trump is correct when he says the United States of America, they're paying more than any country out there in the price of prescription drugs. We're paying probably anywhere between 3 to 5 times more on the brand name drugs than we are and than other countries are. And a lot of people want to point the finger at Big Pharma, you know, the drug manufacturers. Well, I'm not going to sit here and say they are knights in shining armor, because they probably have their problems just like we all do, but they're not the sole problem. You know, you have the pharmacy benefit managers that are out there, the insurance companies that are out there, the healthcare brokers and consultants that are out there that are devising these health insurance plans. So you have a lot of players out there that's just steadily putting another layer of cost on the prescription drugs here in the United States of America.
Yeah.
But I will say this. I am glad that this administration is trying to do something. Now, will this executive order help reduce the cost of the drugs overall? Maybe, maybe not. But it might get to all of the policymakers and all of the players to the table to see what can be done over the next 4 years of this administration.
Well, doesn't the order just request, essentially, it's asking the pharmaceutical companies to lower prices, and if they don't by a certain date, they're going to negotiate or compel them to somehow.
That's correct, yes. And you start talking about the first 30 days.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so here we are. What's today? June the 16th. So we're 30 days into this thing right here, and I haven't heard of anything else that the Trump administration has done. So where are we? Where are we moving forward on this right here? But you're 100% correct. You know, the president in his executive order wants to move to a most favored nation policy right here. And he's also talking about in that executive order about allowing the end user, the patient, to maybe bypass everybody and go straight to the manufacturer. That's kind of scary right there.
Well, why do you need an order for that? I mean, so that would, like, dictate to Big Pharma, you can't have anybody between you and the end user, patient, customer.
That's right. It sounds like the end user, the customer, the patient, would have the ability to go straight to Big Pharma. Well, I'll be honest with you. You know, I'm not going to feel comfortable enough to go straight to Big Pharma to buy my prescription drugs. You've got to have that healthcare provider in the middle somewhere. You know, the pharmacist. Doesn't matter.
Well, I assume you still need a prescription.
Correct. Yes. You would definitely have to have a prescription. I mean,
okay.
I would imagine. And you know, for the most part, we're talking brand name drugs right here. I don't think it's really targeting the generic drugs. We're talking the brand name drugs right here. So there are a lot of little issues here with this executive order. Now, granted, we're dealing with Donald Trump here. You know, he's the deal maker, or claims to be the deal maker. So this might be a way for him to try to get all parties at the table and say, all right, guys, we're fixing to do something here.
So my understanding is that in this country, generics are considerably less than in other countries, but it's the name brands that are more.
You're correct. The name brand, the brand name drugs are the ones that are the big problems here in the United States of America. And, you know, you see all of these ads in some papers across the country where you can buy, you know, a brand name drug from Canada, get it shipped to you here a lot cheaper and everything else like that. The president is right. You know, Americans are paying 3 to 5 times more for the brand name drugs. You know, the drug companies, Big Pharma, members, they are the ones that are spending millions and billions researching all of this. They're coming up with the drug. They're manufacturing the drug. The pharmacists are the ones out there taking care of the patients, dispensing this medication, helping the patients across this country. And a lot of the problem is these middlemen, the pharmacy benefit managers, and you and I've had this conversation many, many times before. They're the ones, in most cases, they're driving the cost up. You know, PBMs have always said we're the ones that are helping reduce drug costs. Well, if you look at how the PBM model truly works, they would have to put themselves out of business to really truly reduce drug costs, because the way their model works is they have to keep the price high, because PBMs force the drug companies to pay these large rebates, and it's basically a pay-to-play scheme that's going on out there. And you and I have touched on this a lot of times. You have to get to the root of the problem. I understand what this administration is wanting to do. I just don't know at the end of the day if this executive order is going to accomplish everything that it wants to do. Now, this might be the first stepping stone.
Yeah,
and then we might look up 6 months from now, toward the end of the year, and the president and his administration might be doing something else. You never can tell with this administration.
So, there are analysts in the industry say, Robert, that one of the advantages that the EU has, for example, is that they have socialized medicine. So it's the government is really the only buyer, for the most part, and they're negotiating directly with the pharmaceutical companies, whereas in this country you got multiple parties. You got Medicare and Medicaid, of course, a number of commercial insurers, and then just other direct players. So we don't leverage a single source of buying power.
You and I are both free market type guys, and
sure,
you know, we've had this conversation again many times before. But in healthcare, there is no free market in the United States.
That's right.
And you and I have always agreed on that. And
we do.
And we have some friends that might disagree with us on that.
Right.
But in the United States right now, it's not healthcare, it's health business.
I agree.
And you know, maybe we need to patent that right there and sell T-shirts.
Hang on, we got a break. We'll come back and talk some more. Robert Dozier with the Mississippi Independent Pharmacies Association.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Let's do this.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
Let's go.
We're talking to Robert Dozier, Executive Director of Mississippi Independent Pharmacy Association. So, have any of the big pharmaceutical companies, have they obliged with the president's request?
Now, you know, like I was telling you earlier, I was trying to do some research this morning and everything. Not to my knowledge. I haven't been able to find if the big pharma companies have finally sat down with the administration and started this process and everything. Like, I think we're 30 days. We're in 30 days, a little over 30 days, and the executive order says that they have to start doing this process within 30 days. I feel like you're probably going to start seeing lawsuits pop up on this issue right here. Big Pharma is going to probably step up to the plate and file lawsuits. Do I know that? Not with any certainty. That's just a guess right there.
Right.
Because you're you picked up on a point a while ago. You're talking about Medicaid and Medicare, but then also the administration is maybe looking at doing some of this on the private side as well. Now, that gets into a whole another ball of wax and such. So we're going to probably start seeing maybe some lawsuits between Big Pharma and the federal government, and we might also be seeing some roadblocks like we were talking about earlier with the Inflation Reduction Act law that's out there. I'm sorry, I know you and I both suffer from sinus colds right now, and it's kind of hard to think.
Yeah, so I haven't seen any movement either. Now, I will point this out, and I'm not defending pharmaceutical companies here whatsoever, mm-hmm. but from a financial perspective, the top 10, I looked it up, I researched They make about $90 billion a year. Google made $120 last year.
That's look.
It's a $4.7 trillion industry. It's the largest industry in healthcare in the country. Their profit is way less than 1%. If they were made no money, your healthcare costs would change by less than 1%.
It's like we said a while ago. It's not healthcare, it's health business.
I agree.
And you're sitting, you make a very good point for the brand name drug manufacturer. And the issue is this, where's the problem?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Where's the problem?
You know, where's the problem at in this scenario right here? Because I'm representing the independent pharmacist of the state of Mississippi, and I know what they're going through right now. You and I've talked about this many times,
and I want to get to that. Yeah.
Okay. And so we're sitting here. I know what my guys are seeing on their bottom line, and it's you know, number one, it's nowhere near Google and or anybody else, but they're in trouble right now, and it is that way across the country for independent pharmacists, especially when you see Walgreens that just got bought out by a private equity firm. Then Rite Aid is over here; they're filing bankruptcy. So where's the problem? Well, all things point to the guys that are in the middle, and the president has also mentioned the pharmacy benefit managers multiple times. He's called them these middlemen
monsters.
I don't know who they are. I don't know who these middlemen are, but they're the ones making all the money. They are the ones making all the money.
Okay,
and they're not producing anything like the drug companies are. They're not producing a product, and they're not taking care of the patient like the pharmacists in this state are.
So the legislation this past session that would have reformed the PBM industry, tell us about that and why you think it didn't get over the finish line.
All right. So legislation that we had this past session was it was some good language in there. It added a lot of transparency. It added a lot of things in there that would have helped the independent pharmacists across the state and stuff. And you're seeing a movement of pro independent pharmacy legislation across the country right now, and basically against the PBMs. It got down to the conference committee and such, and you know, you get three people from both sides, each chamber, and they come up with a conference committee report. There at the last moment, there was some language that was put in there that would have actually been, it would have been going backwards for the independent pharmacists. There was language in there that would have taken out of the ERISA plans from the steering section right there. And probably if you look at a typical independent pharmacist business, it's, you know, their ERISA plans could be anywhere between 50% to 75% of their business, just given any particular business that's out there. So if you took that steering part out of the ERISA plans, it would have really hurt the independent pharmacists right there. And then there was some language that was in there dealing with a severability clause, and that basically the way it was written, it was going to harm the independent pharmacists as well. So that it was all kind of a step backwards if it would have gone into effect and such with those two things right there.
What does your organization want to see happen?
What they'd like to see is what is more transparency in the PBM marketplace. They also want to see fair reimbursements. And NADAC, and you and I have talked about this a lot of times, NADAC is a true and honest and transparent form of reimbursement out there. Now, the PBMs, the insurance companies, the healthcare consultants, they don't want NADAC because the PBMs and the insurance companies can control the pricing mechanism that they have right now. They cannot control NADAC. The healthcare consultants and brokers that are out there selling these plans to these large employer groups, they don't want NADAC either because NADAC gets to a true cost-plus methodology. And the reason why these guys don't want it is because they are getting basically paid on both sides if they stay with the old reimbursement methodology there. You've probably seen some of this in the computer software business right here. So whenever you go to a cost plus methodology, you have cost that's out there that's on a website and everybody can see what the cost is. And then you put a dispensing fee out there and you know what that is. You have two true numbers. It's real easy, but the PBMs don't want that. And that is a way that you will start seeing drug cost or the overall cost go down, because the Mississippi Division of Medicaid went to a NADAC-based methodology several years ago. Their numbers are savings of $55.5 million annually. Ohio just recently reduced some numbers. They're saving somewhere about $70 million a year as well. And this is happening all over the country in these Medicaid offices. Now, Alabama just went and passed legislation just a few months ago. They are allowing the pharmacies to be reimbursed at NADAC plus a professional dispensing fee. Iowa, they just signed legislation into law last week that would allow the pharmacies to be reimbursed at NADAC plus a professional dispensing fee. So states are moving in that direction. And we have to get to a direction where everybody knows what's going on and that the PBMs are not in control of everything right here.
So when that happens, does that mean the PBMs get less money? Comes out of their pocket?
Well, the PBMs, they have so many different ways of charging the employer groups out there that the employer groups, they don't really know. The PBMs are always constantly saying, well, if we go to a NADAC methodology, it's going to raise prescription drug costs. They haven't been able to show it. And here we are with Mississippi saving money and the Division of Medicaid. And here we are with Ohio just recently releasing a report showing it saves their state money. We have West Virginia out there. They're reimbursing at NADAC plus in a commercial market. The sky hasn't fallen over in West Virginia. So the PBMs, they either need to come to the table with hard numbers and say, hey, NADAC does not work, and this is why it doesn't work, rather than just use these scare tactics.
How do you square that, Robert, with this idea that government is interfering, is instituting price controls by doing that?
Drew, thank you for asking that question, because it goes back to what you and I were talking earlier, and we've had this discussion multiple times. There is not a free market in healthcare.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, it just isn't. I'm a free market guy. I'm a capitalist out there. But when the pendulum gets too far to one side, we have to have government kind of bring it back in to check.
It's so convoluted.
Oh, it is.
The whole healthcare industry is.
I go back to it's not healthcare, it's health business.
Yeah. Appreciate you coming in, Robert.
Hey, thank you, my friend.
Thank you, man. Yeah. Robert Dozier, Executive Director of the Mississippi Independent Pharmacies Association, coming right back.
From the Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
It is on.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
Wow! I feel good.
Welcome back.
I feel good.
Hope my voice isn't too annoying today. Should be better.
We've had several people on the text line say you sound a little bit like Slick Willie Bill Clinton.
I saw that. Curses on you.
I just need you to repeat after me. It depends on what the definition of is.
So true. So Matt in Burnsville says the cash price is usually less than the copay. Pharmacies are not allowed to reveal that info. That true?
It depends. I mean, yeah, there are some generics that have been out and on the market as a generic for decades that you can get for pennies on the dollar compared to what your copay would be. But that's not a, it's not true as a blanket statement.
You know, again, and Robert's right, and he and I have had this conversation online and offline. We don't have a free market in healthcare. And so when you don't have that, you can't just rely on the market to sort these things out. And so you have to regulate it. It's highly, highly regulated.
Yeah, the government's thumb is already on the scale, whether we like it or not. The question is, how much can you remove the thumb from the scale? Because it doesn't seem like there's much of an appetite to remove it entirely. But you also don't want to be too heavy-handed at the same time.
That's right. You can, because you can cause more problems. It's plugging a dike. Uh-oh. Plug this one. Giant hole over there now. So my Paula Meridian says, my blood pressure medicine jumped off the $4 plan, almost $36 now. Yeah, Robert said the $4 plan was actually hurting the pharmacists. So
yeah, I mean, the $4 plan, it wasn't necessarily a loss leader the way you usually think of a loss leader, like, for example, the crazy sales they'll have on 12 packs of soft drinks or gallons of milk or something like that to get you in the store so you buy other stuff. But as far as I understand, the formularies for the $4 plans and the cheaper plans at different pharmacies, there were some products on there that they weren't quite breaking even, but they were usually, from what I understand, prescriptions that you were getting with others that they were going to make their money back on. I mean, they put a lot of time and energy into the math to figure out how they could fill that formulary for the $4 plan.
Would you, it's kind of long, would you read Jennifer in Oxford's text for us?
Yeah, it says, I agree that Trump's plan for medications will work. I will say that we have received my son's Dupixent directly from manufacturer for several years before Blue Cross Blue Shield added it to their formulary. We had better service, and what I paid for the medicine directly as a cash price was $1,500 per week for his single weekly injection, $6,000 for the four-week supply. The cash price at CVS Specialty is closer to $28,000 per month. Of course, this isn't what Blue Cross Blue Shield allows, but my out-of-pocket is relatively the same. I'm a huge supporter of independent pharmacies, and just as a reminder, Dupixent is a specialty drug with few options for obtaining. Blue Cross Blue Shield requires CVS Specialty, which, according to Jennifer, is horrible to work with.
Mm. So what do you do? What's the solution? That's, I mean, it's a tough one, and I feel for Jennifer, and I don't know what the solution is. This is obviously a name brand drug.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, it's used for a variety of various conditions like eczema.
Okay, yeah, I looked it up. It says conditions related to inflammation caused by specific immune system proteins called interleukins.
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, eczema is the most widely experienced disorder caused
okay.
by that.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, I'm looking at it. You're right. Moderate to severe eczema.
I think it also includes certain types of asthma
it sure
or COPD.
Does. You're right. It does. Interesting. Wow. So chronic obstructive pulmonary disease? I guess that's all related to this inflammation part.
Yeah, that's COPD.
Issue. Yeah, okay.
That's commonly associated with long-time smokers.
Okay.
You don't necessarily have to have been a smoker to come down with it, but it is tightly linked.
It's expensive.
Oh, yeah. And that is an issue that the healthcare industry has run into because America is the innovator in healthcare. I want to say it's 98% of all healthcare innovations come out of the United States. That may be a bit of an outdated number, but it's the vast majority. So because of that, you do have these pharmaceutical manufacturers that are coming out with newer, better, stronger, faster ways of treating illness. And they've spent millions upon millions of dollars in research and development that they feel they need to recoup as quickly as possible.
Sure.
But where on the same hand, on the same side of the, or on the opposite side of the coin of that, you have pharmacies that are, you have pharmaceutical companies that are producing these newer, better, faster, stronger drugs. Those same pharmaceutical companies are gaming the system to their advantage when they take drugs that they've already released, that they've already had on the market. And the example I always go back to is Flexeril, because a lot of people have taken Flexeril as a muscle relaxer after a surgery or after an incident. And Flexeril, for the longest time, I believe it came in 10 milligrams. Well, the name brand manufacturer Flexeril came out and said, well, we offered 7.5 milligrams. Hmm. And they would change the packaging to say, well, it covers this and that and the other and this other new thing. Well, just because it does something new and you change the dosage, is there really a need to enforce the trademark on the name brand for that when you literally already have that same drug on the market in generic, and it has been generic for decades?
Yeah, you and I have talked about this. We definitely need some patent reform. I think that's all true. I'll offer this as well, and we've discussed this before. You know, there are lots of new drugs in development right now on the table. And once they're developed, approved, a whole lot of money goes into that, whole lot of time. Depending on the size of the market, that's what dictates the cost. They got to recover the R&D. And who knows? I mean, they've got all that figured in their economic models, how long that lasts. But something you and I have talked about, a potential solution to this, is quantum computing and AI.
Yeah, because it would dramatically reduce the cycles spent in research and development. Because instead of having to iterate and have humans check these iterations, you can plug it in and run the model, and the computer will give you the same results as those iterations it would have taken months and years in a fraction of the time.
Yeah. I just have always believed that the way to solve the human problem of, which is the fundamental human problem and always has been, is matching supply with demand. Everything stems from that. And the way you address that, in this case, the demand to live longer, be healthier, and address medical problems, we do that with medical treatment, medical care, and that includes, of course, drugs. So,
there's one way. It's not a blanket end-all be-all help for everybody, but say, for example, you were taking two prescriptions that were generically available, and your doctor prescribes you this new drug that you only have to take one pill or capsule. Well, that new drug is likely going to be a name brand, because that's another way the pharmaceutical manufacturers are kind of gaming the system is, oh, well, we've got these two generics. If we combine them, we can call that a name brand and charge more for it. And if you run into that situation where you were paying, if you had both of your generics on the $4 plan, all of a sudden your doctor prescribes you this one name brand and it's going to cost you an arm and a leg, talk to your doctor. Say, hey, doc, I can't afford that new one. Can we go back to taking two? Because you can still get the two parts of that one name brand in generics for a lot cheaper.
Hmm.
That's not going to help everybody, but I'm sure that could help somebody.
So somebody's talking about Lyrica. You see that on the text line?
It says from the 662, it's Lyrica for me. Insurance won't pay for real Lyrica, $700 out of pocket for me per month, legs and feet swelling every day. But it will not pay for name brand Lyrica, so I will have to live with swelling legs and feet daily.
So on the C-Spire text line, more than the U.S. needs to pay R&D and clinical trials for new drugs. But, okay, so how would you do that, though? I mean, if, for example, this order goes into effect and Medicare, Medicaid say we're only paying favored nation pricing, that's going to have a dramatic impact on their bottom lines. They're talking about the drug companies. What does that do to innovation, creation of new drugs? It's a complicated issue is all I'm saying. And just the viability of those companies at that point is messed up, no doubt. I don't have any solutions, and maybe that's a start. I think that Robert's right. Let's get them to the table and start talking about a solution. Final segment of Middays on this Monday is next.
Poly up a Mississippi.
Are we going to do this?
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Keep rolling. 3, 2, 1.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
I'm in a hurry to get things done. Oh, I rush and rush until life's no fun. All I really gotta do is live and die, but I'm in a hurry and don't know why. Don't know why. I have to drive so fast. My car has nothing to prove. It's not you.
Welcome back. It's been an interesting conversation at a minimum. And it's a conversation that needs to continue. I mean, I struggle with this one, honestly. I know that the industry is convoluted. And we had a pharmacist send a text as well that honestly was over my head. I know you understood it, but I think the main message was there are a lot of pieces in the puzzle. We want pharmaceutical companies to continue to innovate. I don't think we could deny that we're all better because of the innovations that have come from the drug industry in this country. But there does seem to be some disparity in cost and pricing, and there are a lot of causes for that.
I think one of the main ones, and the pharmacist on the text line mentioned it, is the introduction of the PBMs. Because to oversimplify, probably to the detriment of the conversation, but to oversimplify a really complicated flowchart of how PBMs work, they're basically a middleman working at the behest of the insurers, and the middleman, all of the savings that you would have seen before the introduction of PBMs are now being vacuumed up by the PBMs.
Okay, that makes sense.
So if before PBMs became a thing, you were saving $50 a month on your prescriptions. Well, now the PBMs come along and they need that $50 a month to pay their overhead. Well, you're no longer getting that $50 a month savings.
And to me, a reasonable regulation that we shouldn't even argue about would prohibit the PBM from being owned by the same company that owns the retail pharmacy, right? I mean, that's a no-brainer, is it not? Because that does put the independent pharmacists at a decided disadvantage. Seems like we could agree on that.
Because they can't stand up their own.
Right. We could agree on that. Even at a minimum at a state level. And as I recall, the speaker was concerned about the legislation. And his point, his rationale was that it would have increased costs for commercial coverage, right? So I need to understand more about it. I'm not sure that there's any one thing you could point to and say, oh, this will fix it.
And that's part of the problem, is it is such a complex web of inner workings and legalese and contracts.
Yeah.
That I don't even think people that work in the industry, you would be hard pressed to find more than a dozen people across the country that fully understand the entirety of the PBM infrastructure.
No doubt.
they understand whatever they have to deal with on a daily basis, and that's what they're focused on to comprehend. But the whole thing is just over bloated.
I've said this before. If you go out and look at like a graphical representation of the relationship between the pharmacy companies, the ones that make the drugs, the retailers, the PBMs, third-party insurers, the ingredients makers, and everybody else, government, it'll hurt your head. It's so dang complicated.
Yeah, looking at that flow chart is about the same as looking at Einstein's chalkboard when he's explaining relativity. There are people that understand it. The vast majority of people are looking at it going, I don't get it.
Agree. You better get that voice healed, Gerard. Thought I was listening to Gavin Newsom. That's Dave from Ripley. Please, Dave, don't insult me like that. That'll be better. Need about a day. I'll be better. It's much better than yesterday, by the way. So, progress underway. Man, a state Democratic lawmaker in North Carolina, for those that don't believe Trump derangement syndrome is a thing, she posted on her social media a photo for the No Kings protest of an image of the president beheaded. Unbelievable. Has since removed it. So anybody that thinks that it's not a real thing, the TDS, look no further than this lunatic. Unbelievable. We're out of here today. It's Ricky Matthews with Super Talk Outdoors coming up next after Fox News and Super Talk News. I'm going to go get the voice healed. Be back with you on Wednesday. Dave Hughes filling in tomorrow. Stay safe and God bless everyone.
Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.